Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
New York, she used to hold me like a mother. Now she just throws me to the lions and the wolves. I remember your face stares at me like the hero. Long ago I was king of your world. You held me close and I made you feel like you were protected from the forces of nature. And the blood. Oh, and I'm asking you, can you still love me after all the hell that I put you through? Oh, I was man enough to break your heart. Baby, I'm the king and they're never gonna take me alive. Take me alive. Was the worth of my world, the worst of my life. And once upon a time, I was king of your world. You held me close and I made you feel like you were protected from the forces of nature. But when I close my eyes late at night, baby, I'm the king. King of your world, and you stare at me as someone who would crumble with the flesh and the blood. Oh, and I'm asking you, can you still love me after all the hell that I put you through? Oh, I was man enough to break your heart. Baby, I'm the king, and they're never gonna take me alive. Take me alive. But when I close my eyes late at night, baby, I'm the king. I'm the king of your world. And you stare at me as someone who would crumble with the flesh and the blood. Oh, and I'm asking you, can you still love me after all the hell that I put you through? Well, I was man enough to break your heart. Baby, I'm the king, and they're never gonna take me alive. Take me alive. Take me alive.
Sound.
That is like the thinnest applause sound, Jack.
Yeah, that was the wrong one, sorry. Yeah.
Well, there are only
it's more like this.
So, and I'm not applauding.
Oh, yeah.
There we go.
There
you go. Everyone in the restaurant.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz, a.k.a. Terry Diabolic, sipping on coffee, eating pizza, being serenaded by the great Ramesh. Is Ramesh like Madonna?
Yeah, it is now, yeah.
Love it. You may recognize that sweet, sweet voice and insightful lyrics from his previous band, Voxtrot. And now you're doing the solo thing.
Yeah, well, luckily I have a name that can work solo. Not all of them.
Well, I think,
here, not in India. India, I'd be screwed, but... You know.
I think also...
Is like John?
Not like John, maybe like Peter. No, I don't know. Something like that.
I think, but also you've been DJing and doing a lot of solo stuff on your own for a while that people know who you are.
I hope so.
I know who you are.
Yeah, that's good.
We've been buddies for a while.
Well, at least four people know who I am, so...
Yeah. Greg, how you doing over there?
I'm good. It's good to see you. It's good to see... I feel like I haven't seen you in a while. Now you've been back in New York off and on for...
Actually almost 6 weeks, but I left to Philadelphia for a bit, and then...
I love that when I randomly texted you on Saturday night, you were just in the other room at the same party.
That was a weird moment of psychic synchronicity, wasn't it?
I was like, I wonder what Ramesh's up to. He's like, I'm at the Woolly. I was like, hey, buddy! So how are things going? So tell us about the new project. What are you working on?
I've almost finished the entire album, basically, but being indecisive like I am, I keep kind of... making and remaking things, but I've got about 10 songs that are completed, and then 5 of which came out as an EP sort of secretly the other night. I just want
go please to explain.
I don't know. I mean, it's weird in the age of internet advertising, it's the ultimate way to really publicize yourself for free, but I was just so last minute getting everything finished that I'm releasing it through the Other Music web store, and I just posted it the other night, and I've sort of put the link in a few places, but haven't really.
Does that conflict with the Other Music release?
What do you mean?
Wait, sorry, I thought you meant Other Music as in like the record store.
I do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I did it. They have a web store.
Right, okay.
So I just...
upload it?
Are you upload it? Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah, it's there right now, actually.
Do people know about it?
I don't think so, not yet.
Well, then this is another Snacky Tunes debut.
This is the release... I guess maybe even tonight is kind of a release show, but... I wasn't thinking of it that way, but you're right, it is.
Wow.
I just didn't think, you know, it's weird because you can do things so quickly that I had all these deadlines and then things were taking a lot longer and then I finally had it on Saturday night and I'm like, okay, here it is.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
I didn't...
So if you want to download it, you can.
Where would you go to download it?
You could go to the official Ramesh Facebook page, has a couple of links to it. It's also on my linked from the Twitter account. And then if you go to the Other Music store, I think if you search Ramesh, it probably will be the only thing that comes up unless there is the...
I don't know. They have a giant...
They have a giant,
yeah. Indian, trance, Goa.
keep going. This is good stuff.
That's all I got.
Yeah, what else comes in that genre?
So I don't know. So I want to ask because, you know, we haven't talked about it. Voxtrot ended, and then I saw you again when you did a couple shows and a final tour, but what have you been up to, like, the last
year?
2 years?
It's only been a year. Well, I mean, Voxtrot ended on my birthday, so June 26th last year, and then I started recording...
Happy birthday?
Happy birthday, I know. Well, it was kind of, yeah, emotional, but sort of, let's say, bittersweet. But actually starting the week after that, I started recording... the solo stuff. So I've been pretty much working on it solidly for a year.
I mean, and you know, I know you started off as a teacher back in the day. Did you go back to teaching or just odd jobs? Or
no, I've been working in a restaurant.
What's the position?
I guess officially it would be maitre d', right?
I don't know. I haven't been to your restaurant.
That's a really good point. Yeah. In my head, I was self-checking with myself. I mean, Austin, you know, it's casual. You don't really have... things like that, but
I mean, it's
a nice restaurant. So.
I mean, I was a host at Red Robin back in the day. I would never.
You were a host?
I started as a host, worked my way up to busboy. That's right.
Isn't that working your way down?
I think that's backwards, right?
Well, more money.
Yeah, less prestige.
Yeah, they didn't quite see me at the front door when they walked in. I was just putting like greasy baskets into a black plastic tub.
I used to be a busboy also. And actually, I think I did technically make more money, which is really depressing.
Yeah. I mean,
but it's just to, I don't know, it's a hard job to have busboy.
It's, I mean, there,
like,
there's
literally clearing people's plates.
There's literally no glory in it.
No, not
I don't
at all.
Think there's like any type.
There's glory in a day of work, good day of work.
Okay, yes, but
yeah.
The Do or Dine guys are saying, yeah, what's the glory in being a busboy?
Extreme carries, dude. Like, you get like a stack of plates, like as tall as yourself, and you like deliver them successfully, you know?
All right, bragging rights.
Yeah.
To other busboys.
Yeah.
Okay, but other than that.
I bet you there are busboy competitions. Like best.
In which what happens?
Extreme carries, cleaning, Delivering of whatnot.
Oh,
they're
man.
Barista competitions.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
I'm
true.
Gonna, I'm actually, I'm going to the web on this one.
But the busboy one, you'd have to make a mess and then be like, clean it up.
If there aren't, we're going to start one.
Yeah.
There we go.
I mean, okay. So, for Voxtrot, you were writing for five.
Just so you know, there isn't one. So
okay,
do or die busboy competition 2012 coming up.
Yeah.
So back to Voxtrot. Back
no,
to
not, no, that I want to talk about the songwriting process because
okay.
It's you know how has it evolved from you know the previous projects to like, what you're writing to what you're writing now.
Well, I guess I mean it's still even with Voxtrot, it was that I would come to them with the song like what is happening here sort of, and then we would build it together. I mean, now I still am collaborating with people, so that still happens, but I guess I have, it's like more of a dictatorship and less democratic.
I like to say benevolent monarchy.
Yeah, that's really nice, actually.
Have you found, though, that, because I found that a lot of times, especially in groups like that, there is some sort of good output that comes from creative tension and different ideas. Do you miss that a little bit, or do you find that you're just happy just to do exactly what you want to do?
Well, I still get it sometimes. It's a thing. I mean...
And then they're banished.
Depending on who I... They're banished, yeah. Depending on who I'm working with, then it still happens, you know? I haven't... Like, the more I do it, the more I think that it will become exactly what I want it to be. And eventually I'll find exactly those... In the future, a second album, whatever, those exact right collaborators that happened throughout history where...
Yeah.
Have a great partnership, but right now, I mean, it's cool being able to, because there were lots of things with Voxtrot, especially at the end, because it was so democratic, that I think it lost a little character, because
everybody
had so much say, whereas in the beginning, it was more like...
I think probably the do or don't guys can speak that when everybody wants to be the cool guy, everyone wants to get along, stuff gets lost. You know, it's sometimes you just need that asshole to come and be like, this is how we're doing it. Oh, yeah? Were you nominated, or did you self-nominate?
Just a natural order of things.
I think you do. I think at some point you just need, especially for the creativity to flow, you need someone to be a leader at some times.
Well, I mean, I think that you can have different types of, you know, constructive group process, but you don't have to be nice about it. It's like, I mean, that, I don't know how to say it. It's like, yeah, like, we'll try that. And you're like, wow, we just wasted 20 hours on an idea that didn't really work, as opposed to be like, that's like, I hear your idea, it's not gonna
it's not
work
working.
It's not working, like this is, I mean, it's weird to say it, but like, it's business.
Yeah
Or it's not like the right brand direction or the band direction or anything. That's like, I'm sorry,
we call it a rabbit hole in the studio.
Oh, is that what it is?
Well, yeah, when you end up wasting like 4 hours when nobody has the nerve to be like, no, it's not good.
It's so weird because you always think you're gonna be that guy who's like, it's like, I'm just gonna go in there and get it done. Then you know, and they're like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
But now it's just, so when you do the recording, how much of it is you recording and, you know, versus, do you bring the people who play live with you in, or do you record a lot of stuff yourself?
Actually, I'm really hired a lot of people to play on the album. Weirdly, almost none of them are a couple of them are the people that actually play in the live band. But, I mean, some of it was some of the guys from Voxtrot, but not really that much. Yeah, but I do play more than I did on Voxtrot. I pretty much only played guitar or whatever the thing is that I played live on stage.
That sweet, sweet vocal pipe.
That sweet, sweet. I'm still playing that. Yeah.
All right, well, let's hear it. Let's hear another song.
Actually, the next song was the very last Voxtrot song, but is the only one that I still play because I feel like
you need a bridge.
Well, it was at the end, and it was actually kind of the thing that started with me writing the string parts and stuff that changed it a little bit for me and made me want to do solo things. So it's the only song I take.
It's like the Breeders' Pod record, which were all like Pixie songs that Kim Deal never got to put on the albums.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, fine.
I mean, yeah, whatever.
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 I know music, whatever.
Spend your whole life trying to get back home. Oh, where do you go? Keen eyes unfold you in a coat of chrome. The feelings show. And what do you know? Tell me, what do you know?
What do you know about where I come from? What do you know? Tell me, what do you know about who I am? When I see you naked, I see more than flesh. Do you see the same thing? Entertainment value, no, I couldn't care less. The feelings high, and you were so young, baby, you were so young, dragging your feet in the face of creation. I was so young, yeah, we were so young, and still there was you, the center of me, and still there was you, the center of me. And I don't know you, baby, you don't know me. We are just victims of the same situation. Baby's big war, tell me what you died for. We were just born to lose this life. Could we please get married? Do this just for us, the way we would do. It doesn't make much sense, but maybe nothing does. It never will. And these gears keep turning, these lives keep burning, and love keeps changing around you. Stuck in one place and painting your face the color of now, the color of sky, the colors of you. The colors don't lie. And I don't know you, baby, you don't know me. We are just victims of the same situation. Baby's big war, tell me what you die for. Urges grow cold, but the feeling stays. Tell me, what do you know? You don't know me, don't you question my love? And what do you know? Tell me, what do you know? You don't know me, don't you question my love?
Awesome. Nice. So when you nice. When you play
no big
that
applause. No, I'm just kidding.
When you wow.
Oh man, the one hand even worse.
When you play that, do you think like this is a Voxtrot song? Or do you think this is a Ramesh song?
I don't know. I guess probably a. I don't know. For to me, they're indistinguishable,
right.
Sort of.
I mean, are the themes generally the same? Are you singing about the same thing, or is it just changed because you've gotten older and
yeah,
perception?
I mean, yeah, that's what I think. I think like that song to me is more like in keeping with what I'm doing now and want to do, but I guess it is a Voxtrot song, but.
What is it? And
but the problem is that, I mean, it's like at the end, I mean, we'd already lost one member, not like death, but I mean, Jared quit. So I don't know. It was a lot of me in the studio kind of trying out the things that I wanted to try. But sorry, what were you asking?
No, I'm just saying like where the, like how the evolution has gone from like, do you still see it as a Voxtrot song, as a Mace song, or is like you would have probably written a song like that with the themes just because. It's you and you're doing this main songwriting about the main songwriting.
I think C.
Okay.
I think C is the correct answer. I don't know. I mean, right now there's so little time in between the two things that connection is still going to be there.
That's true. So we've had other bands in here that have like gone through second reincarnations or gone to the next project. Is there anything that you see about, you know, thinking that you would do differently this time or approach things differently this way around?
And so many things. I mean, I guess I would not take things for granted. Like, I wouldn't, like, I mean, although we worked really hard, Voxtrot, to get to a certain, but after a certain point, like, you get burnt out, and so you have a bad attitude, and you take stuff for granted, and you don't realize that it's really special to have a career in music. You forget that, basically, and you become resentful of it. But now that I'm, like, really passionate about it again and I'm happier again, I see that it was a really wonderful thing. And I don't I wouldn't, this time around, I won't lose that.
It's tough on the first time around to have that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, you get really into a culture of deserving, just like that everything that comes to you is just something, well, which you do deserve it if you work really hard, but I don't know, you're just not really very thankful, I don't think. But this time around, I would try and see the joy in it always instead of the opposite.
I mean, you're also really young. It's not like we're talking about...
Yeah.
You're like, you know, in your late...
Jeff Bridges and Crazy Heart.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean...
I cannot wait to see you at that stage.
Well, hopefully that won't be my life at that stage.
Wait, you can't wait to see him like washed up alcoholic?
No. Just like
I'm Texan.
Like, yeah. Old Ramesh, like 75-year-old Ramesh.
Well, hopefully that one is dignified and financially secure and well respected.
I see you in a suit or some white chinos or something like that.
I can see that. I already have white chinos.
So put them in the closet.
So
bring them out in 4 decades.
Up in New York, what do you like to eat when you get up here? Because you're really spending time between here and Austin. So, what do you when you're up here? What do you miss from home?
To be honest, I don't really miss. I know the correct answer for everybody from Austin is I'm supposed to say breakfast tacos
there is no
or
correct
barbecue
answer.
Or something like that. But I never eat those things, so not that I'm against them. But here I have been – I'm trying to think where I've been that I thought was amazing. I've eaten at this restaurant, this Italian restaurant in the Lower East Side called Sauce that I thought was really good twice. I've been to – I don't remember. I went to Baltazar the other night. But I don't know where all the exciting new things are. I only know of these.
Do or Dine, yeah. Bushwick.
So
right there.
Yeah, right there. You're sitting next to me.
And you're also sitting in the really exciting area of Roberta's.
Well, maybe the problem. I mean, the place I'm staying is in Manhattan. Maybe everything exciting and new is actually in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I don't know anything exciting new is happening.
That's the case.
But I like food, obviously. But I'm not a. I don't know that much about it, though. Like, I know when I think something is good, but I'm not really up to date, I guess. But this is my chance.
So actually. You need music, man. No problem.
Okay.
You just gotta know what you like.
So I know that you need to get out of here because you gotta go sound check.
Yeah.
So do you just want to give us, like, the nuts and bolts how people can find you and where they might be able to get tickets for the show tonight?
Or buy your album.
Or buy it on the other music website. Or you can go to...
Is it on iTunes?
No, because that... Well... Whatever, it's boring and logistical. It takes forever to get something on iTunes. That's the only problem.
Got it.
But it is on the other music website, and you can't just download it unless you don't live in the United States, and then you're screwed. So,
I mean, and by the way, if you're listening internationally, hey.
Sorry. Yeah. But you can stream it, and probably when people download it, within about 4 days, you'll be able to steal it really easily. So I wouldn't worry about it.
Gotcha. All right, so we're going to
end the show for tonight.
Is tonight... At the Mercury Lounge. Doors are at 8:30. First band, also an Austin band.
Who?
Feathers. Well, actually, the singer, the front woman, was from here. And she was in a lot of dark, like... I think her last band was called Cruel Black Dove.
Wow.
It's like... Yeah.
It's like a bad, like, 90s band from a 90s movie.
They're good. Well, I mean, I would say... I don't know. I don't know if I can say that it was goth because I'm so badly informed about goth. I guess food and goth, things I don't know anything about. But they're good. It's a bunch of... You probably know lots of the girls in the band, actually.
Who's in there?
Alex Gehring, Ringo Death Star. You know her?
No.
Okay.
Let's not do this on the
air. Let's not do this
on the air.
This could go really... You're like, no, I don't know any of them.
Let's not do the... So it's tonight, and what time do you go on?
I go on at 10:30. They're at 9:30, we're at 10:30.
Great. All right.
It's
going to be awesome. I think we go to Punjabi across the street.
Is that a restaurant?
Yeah, it's like a cabbie haunt.
It's my people.
Pretty much.
Right?
So we're going to hear one more song from Ramesh, and then we're going to play a couple songs, and then we'll speaking to Do or Dine. Live, Snacky Tunes, Heritage Radio Network. What's the last
song? Come on, put a little oomph into that.
That is.
Puke them in.
I just puked it out. We
learned from DJ Gina Turner that's the, like, coming at you live on Snacky Tunes.
It's called a puke voice.
Yeah.
That's really terrible.
Yeah, it's awful. So what's the name of the last song?
It's called Requiem. It's the last song on the EP, actually. Let's see if I can puke this out. Wouldn't really work with my vocal style. And you asked me would I live with that ghost in the house. Yeah, I would trade 1 year of fear for that old feeling. and my love for you parades in this room, refusing to leave, hoping to weave my way into the hours when you can fall asleep. Oh, you can fall asleep, but I'm always gonna watch you fall asleep. But I'm always gonna watch you, that's me. I love you with that wild love. I love you with that love. And the rainbow dances with Christ on the wall. The requiem breaks the devil who falls. And I'm free from the pulling force. I'm free from the grasp of that beautiful girl. She was part of my world before I was changed. Changed from the voice into the living thing. And please let it be, you still see him and me. Two hands to play a song for the dead. Oh, a requiem for the one who walks through me. You can walk through me like God and the angel who shelters back from the beast on the hill. And I'm running, I ran across the killing. I ran across the killing. Madonna loves me, Madonna holds me, Madonna dies, Madonna unfolds in me now. I can't believe in nothing. Stand before me in a big dream, asking all you. Stand in my bed, shaking your head. And sing a requiem for the hands God gave you. Walk away, but I'm always gonna love you, that's me. I love you with that wild love, yeah. I love you with that love. A requiem for the boy who needs. A requiem for the child who feeds from the breast. I can't believe in nothing.
Me like a big old machine. I went into one side, landed in a dream. It stirred me up and made me shout. And sometimes I forgot about the way the wind blows in and out of the cottonwood trees. And oh, it's easy to lose. I might have lost mine if I hadn't found you. The avenues, the boulevards, businesses and schoolyards, shopping malls and motor cars, all in one scene. The lowest lows and the highest highs, the meanest noise and the lullabies, the poison and the compromise, the unspoken scream. And oh, it's so hard to find your place. I never found mine if I hadn't seen your face. And you can be my boss, to Keaton I'll be blossomed. Dearie, we can see the world so clearly. You'll color the gray away. I will sing you songs all day. The decay will just turn to bloom as we look at the good old fashioned moon. Well, New York City split me like a log in a mill. Half of me happy, the other half ill. But I feel myself warming to the old neon chill. I still feel a longing, but it's chased by a thrill. And oh, it's so hard to find your place, and I never found mine if I hadn't seen your face. And you can be my boss to keep, and I'll be blessed. And dearie, we can see the world so clearly. You'll color the gray away, I will sing you songs all day. The decay will just turn to bloom as we look at the good old fashioned moon.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Cotton, my mind is rotten. I walk on nails every day just to keep bad thoughts away. The nights are getting harder to fight. I smother my pride. I hope you might be hoping that I might. It's easy for you, it's easy for you. I don't have the drugs to keep me quiet, quiet. It's easy for you, it's easy for you. I don't have the drugs to keep me quiet, quiet. How long can you keep this up? How far do you feel anything? I know you had to go, I know you had to. I know you think it's bad for you, I think it's bad for me.
Why? Why?
I'd love to welcome to the show guys from, I would say, kindred. If we had a restaurant, I would hope that we could be kindred restaurant brothers.
For sure.
But mm-hmm. the boys from Duodorin, why don't you introduce yourself and say your respective roles in your said restaurant.
Luke Jackson, I'm kind of worrier in chief.
Oh, WIC, beautiful.
Yeah. WIC. Yeah, essentially, yeah, I do all the bullshit work.
Okay.
But I also run the bar with my wife, so.
Awesome.
I'm Justin Warner, and I'm a Pabulum director, which is basically with my partner George, who's the advanced prototype. We basically decide what stays, goes, flies, and is served in the kitchen.
And who is Perry, who couldn't join us?
Perry's my very old friend who essentially came to me a while ago and wanted to start a restaurant. He's a designer. So he designed and built the restaurant and financed it for the most part. But operationally, he's kind of a silent partner. So.
And I did actually know what gurgling guts was.
Oh, really?
I remember it. You remember it was like those brains, a little squeezy, like blood.
For like stressed out 13-year-olds?
Yeah, he invented that back in the 90s.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
He's got that gurgling guts money.
Yeah, right.
You know, that and a bus token will get you right on a bus.
So what is the story of Duodorin as you were telling us over the break?
Well, essentially, yeah, I mean, I was working with Justin and George at the Modern, and Perry had been bugging me for a couple of months about starting a restaurant. And yeah, I don't know. I was always in the restaurant industry because I'm a painter, kind of to support my painting. And I don't know. I just figured, you know, Justin and George have a very novel approach to understanding food, kind of more from a linguistic standpoint almost. But it was very novel. And we basically, Justin was doing pancakes outside Perry's jewelry shop, kind of a la minute on the street for people.
Wicked pancakes.
Yeah, wicked pancakes.
What were some of the variations of pancakes?
Well, it spawned out of this thing. I did a show called 24-Hour Restaurant Battle. And so I made a basically like IHOP on drugs. And it was like, so we did like, I know I did like everything with a compound butter and a weird jelly. So like we did just regular old pancakes, but with pumpkin butter and coffee jelly. Nice. So it was like that weird Starbucks drink, but all in one, you know. And so you're at like Perry's art opening. You have a couple of things of wine, and then there's a guy outside making pancakes that tastes like that Starbucks thing. Ready to rock.
One was sweet pea pancakes with kumquat jelly and curry butter.
Yeah, that was the bomb.
That was very good.
Wow.
It was basically like if you take like the flavors like of samosa and then instead of, what do you call those? That tamarind juice, you know? Instead of the tamarind juice, it just went the kumquat route.
Wait, 24-Hour Restaurant, that was like they tried to make like restaurant challenge from Top Chef into an actual TV show?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I got to like fight with my partner at the time. Yeah.
You got paid to fight?
No, oh. But I mean, that was just kind of how it happened, you know?
Got it.
Those shows are geared to prod people.
Yeah, I mean, if you're you're that close to somebody and you're working together and you're up for more than in their face for like more than 12 hours, it's just bound to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So then, I guess what after that, we kind of just got tired of getting drunk at Midtown Manhattan bars, saying, "I wish we had a restaurant. I wish we had a restaurant. Why don't we do this?" And then finally, we came here
to Roberto's.
Yeah. And we were, like, sitting there, and we were having a good old time, and then, like, we see, like, Eric Repair sitting at the table next to us, and we're like, you know, damn it, if these guys are doing it, and Eric Repair is here, then if they're doing it in Bushwick, we can do it in Bed-Stuy.
Yeah. And we knew, like, I've lived in Bed-Stuy now for, like, 8 years, and Justin and George have been living there about 3.5, and we knew the neighborhood well enough that it was the exact right time to do it.
Yeah. So then how did you find your space?
Because
the facade is really interesting.
Yeah, the space was there. Honestly, like, we did it through Craigslist and through a realtor, even though it was rent by owner. We should have just gone through rent by the owner because the real estate guy screwed us.
Out of 2 G's, that would have been our air conditioning.
Three. Yeah.
But yeah, so it was faded, you know, it was just there. And it was perfect because the son of the landlord lives on the top floor and they own, as a family, they own a restaurant.
So are they sympathetic?
Yeah, they're very sympathetic. Yeah. And it's fantastic.
That's great.
Yeah. You come in there and you're talking like, yeah, I'm going to do some foie gras stuff, be the first people to do like, you know, duck in Bed-Stuy. And the guy's like, huh? You know? Yeah. Versus like, I want to make a mustard factory. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was really great.
And so how was the process from saying, we want to do this, we have the building, to when you first opened the doors? What was that like? And how long was it?
There was a lot of problems, as there always are in something as complex as starting a restaurant in New York City. But I think the process could have been far worse. We had a somewhat blessed experience in that everything seemed to come together fairly well. I mean, we had some setbacks. For instance, we didn't get our liquor license even though we were set up to get it on the day that we opened. There was some last minute crap with our liquor license attorney. They didn't really do a fantastic job that way. So we lost our whole first summer with a liquor license. But, you know, we eventually got it, and now we're doing what we're doing. But essentially, everything really kind of fell into place very well.
Also, it was kind of a little bittersweet. BYOB is like a great way to get people like jazzed about coming in, and if they find out that you have really good food and they don't have to pay like exorbitant prices for booze, then like we had people like within 4 weeks of opening bringing in like, you know, Chambol Musigny, you know, like we're like, what the hell, dude, we're like deep frying deviled eggs up in here, like, and you like think that like you can just like ball Burgundy. Okay.
Yeah, we had the president of
Laurent Perrier.
Laurent Perrier come in. And really? She came in like, yeah, it was fantastic. I even made like a la minute wine cart.
out of some 2x4s and a stump.
So let's talk about the food a little bit, because the food is sort of what got you noticed on a like national and respected level, because it's out there in a way that some people might call bullshit on, but it's really good. And how do you guys toe the line of having these creative things that could be written off but actually have them being written about?
Well, you know, how do you do it? I don't know. I think that's kind of our forte, and I don't necessarily know. You know, I can tell you this. George and I aren't the most gifted cooks in the world at all. We still have a lot that we have to learn, but I think what we're good at doing is kind of figuring out, you know, I don't know if you know that, like, that cowbell thing. It's like, yo, sometimes I put my pants on and I make gold records.
Yeah.
It's like George and I put our pants on, like, not together. And sometimes we just come up with a gold dish, you know? The foie gras donut thing, like, I found out after the fact that people had done it, but they just hadn't done it right. And they hadn't done it to a point where, you know, it went viral. And, like,
yeah, I mean, I can understand that idea of, like, you know, food and music. People have done that, and we actually were able to sell a TV show based off it, but like a lot of ideas have been done. It's more in the execution, and
yeah,
also if it hits
right.
I mean, a great man, you know, Brandon Hoy said ideas are the easy part.
Yeah, exactly. He said that just this morning, and I couldn't help but agree.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's just how you go about it, you know. So like, for example, I would say that was the biggest thing that got his attention, you know, when we invented the deep fried deviled egg. It's because we had some deviled eggs sitting there, and we threw them in the tempura batter. Why that's never been done before, I don't know. But now marketing deviled eggs as E666S, that's just something that makes deviled eggs not sound like deviled eggs anymore.
Yeah.
And when people get hit with the joke, that's how it is on the menu. Oh,
okay.
E66S.
Because, so you know, 666 is the number of the devil.
It looks like a typo.
I'm trying to think of it in my head.
It looks like eggs with an extra G in it. But that was a concept George and I had a long time ago, where we had like a deviled eggs restaurant. Think like, think Dunkin' Donuts, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But all eggs.
Basically,
how many eggs do you move a week?
Oh, shit. I don't even want to talk about it, dude. Because I'm like the head egg cracker.
Yeah. I think basically it's safe to say that most of the menu items are based on potential restaurant ideas. Like,
that's actually,
let's do a fries restaurant.
But actually, that's really good. We've talked about that before. It's like Roberta's was built on the pizza. The Frankie's was built on the meatball. And if you take this one product and build a restaurant around it, so if you take a bunch of restaurant-worthy ideas and put them on a menu,
exactly.
Yeah.
It should be pretty good.
That's essentially it. But like, this is what I'm talking about in terms of that linguistic kind of approach.
Yeah.
It's like, we can't help ourselves with the puns. It's like,
no, but
some,
I mean,
people think it's cheesy, but we just, that's,
I mean, I've built a career on puns. I mean, I really love it. And the thing that I like about puns is that when they really work, you know, and I guess there's like, it's just like anything, you know, there's a lot of really bad puns or bad ideas out there, but when you can find that sweet balance of it goes, oh, that's really clever, but oh, wait, that's also really good, it makes it really enjoyable. And from a marketing and branding point of view, like, that's how you get the word out. I think you didn't you make us like a, you, I think you had a pickleback, a spherified pickleback.
That's this is precisely it. Like, the foie gras donut, the spherical back.
Well, can you explain to people what it, okay, about like the rise of picklebacks and what you've done?
Well, you know, from what I've learned about picklebacks is that they're actually much older than the fad would suggest they are.
Oh, I'm sorry, they weren't created a year ago in Brooklyn?
No, they
weren't. I think they were
not
created at the Bushwick Country Club in 2006.
Yeah, I think McClure's came in there and like, what are we going to do with all this extra juice?
The thing is, though, is that it's actually much, much older than that. It's a cowboy drink.
Oh.
And it's from their having to drink really, like, shit whiskey. And it was kind of a... It was kind of a proactive medicinal approach, like preventing a hangover, and also just like, let's get the taste out of this whiskey
as quickly as possible.
Right. So anyways, they've resurfaced as a massive fad here now, and we just figure it's a fad that kind of needs to be taken down a notch, so we decided to take it down a notch by elevating it a notch or two, by combining it with molecular cuisine techniques, you know, jellification.
it's awesome. Well, because we were there with Matt and Kim, and I don't think, and I've had that type of presentation before.
Right.
And if you don't know about how it's totally liquid on the inside,
right?
Not like gummy liquid, like it's straight up just liquid.
Right.
It's like no, put it in your, like, do not do like a half a bite thing. You're just going to get it all down the front of yourself.
Right.
But to watch people do that, and it was fun to do a shot of whiskey and then pop a sphere of pickle juice in the mouth. And
For me, the best way I
can Arto's eyebrows.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's surprisingly good.
I'm wondering why you didn't bring any.
Ah, shit.
Oh, they travel.
They travel. I could put it in a
I mean,
cork
again,
container.
Dude, that just means we have to go out there.
Okay, that's fine.
I don't think I had that way. Sorry. Yeah. I mainly react. No.
First off, it's his day off.
Yeah.
It was just an opportunity for him to say, well, now you got to come out here.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they're young restaurateurs. They'll learn the tricks of the interview.
So can we talk about, which is probably one of like the biggest pivotal moments, is when the New York Times wrote about you guys. Which for me made me,
first off, were the parents proud?
Yeah, my mom, she was like screaming, and not just like proud, but she's like, oh my God, like I'm from the sticks. Like Luke actually like comes from a long storied line of people doing things, but like I'm from the sticks of like Maryland. And so like generally, like had I gone into the military and had a kid, she would have been like, yippee.
You did it.
Yeah. Right. So like, you know, when it's like, yeah, these guys in the New York Times, she was just like freaking flabbergasted, you know? Yeah.
We've always said that the way to really just, you know, confirm with your parents that you've made that decision is to get your name in the Times in a good way.
Or the New Yorker.
In a good way.
Yeah, exactly.
We had both.
So how did that happen, and were you guys surprised?
The PR stuff is really old Justin here. It's kind of, we owe it to Twitter, Facebook, and Justin's obsession with online social media.
Well, you know,
it's kind of amazing.
It's not so much an obsession as just like I found out that it was pretty cool. Like I have these like little Twitter techniques. We don't have a ton of followers, but I just found that you can kind of infect people's lives with your mind. It's like creeping in, you know, when they show up on your Twitter feed. So I don't know, but like one day I was just like, I Twittered to what was it, Pete Wells, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before he was the NYT critic, I just like tweeted at him like, "Yo, we open." Literally, that's it. And he's like, what? I was like, yeah, we're open. He's like, if you thought that was the way to go about like announcing to the Times that you're open, like what would these $1,000 like that are paid into PR firms do? And I'm like, well, there's a restaurant in Brooklyn that's hiring. And so he's like, all right, Flo Fab will be calling you in a couple. And then so that was how we announced our opening.
Wow.
Yeah. That was on our second day.
Yeah, that was on our second day. And
well, you guys were just the first people to... I'm sure people have tried that before, but you guys did it right.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you have like scrappy kids, I just envision that we were scrappy kids. I'm really quite svelte, but he's like scrappy kids.
We're sitting across 2 6-foot-4 just bronze gods here.
Yeah. They got six packs.
Guns. That's how we roll in Bed-Stuy.
Tell my wife.
Yeah.
When they envision these scrappy kids, you know, in Bed-Stuy, like, what? They're making a restaurant. It's called Do or Dine. You know, there's something where you're like, huh? You know?
Yeah. No, I mean, I saw that and I immediately went, I can't believe someone named the restaurant like a pun.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of puns, but it's usually, you know, like walk and roll.
Yeah.
Or something like that. You know, right. Some like really terrible thing.
Well, and the name of the restaurants, that's definitely all Justin. Because I remember when I was talking to Perry about doing the restaurant, I was like, well, Justin, my friend, you know, he has an idea to do a restaurant called Do or Dine in Bed-Stuy. I think it's perfect.
No, I think it's perfect, like, especially for the area, especially because when people hear Bed-Stuy, they have a certain image of what Bed-Stuy is. But it's not really that. So let's talk about the disco ball and the soundtrack, because those two aesthetic elements definitely add to the overall experience.
Well, I guess I'll talk about the soundtrack. I mean, if you want to talk about, the thing is I'm not the hip hop aficionado by any means. Justin schools me on a daily basis on really crappy hip hop. But you know, the thing is that it's part of being aware of our neighborhood
and
not imposing a different kind of aesthetic on the neighborhood. You know, we're actually quite sensitive to it because we love that neighborhood.
Yeah,
we don't
like,
want to change it.
No one like walks down the street bumping Peter, Bjorn, and John, you know?
Yeah.
Or MGMT. It's just not happening.
Unless they're sampled.
Yeah, unless they're sampled. Yeah, Drake did that one thing.
Yeah, they did. He did that, and then I think Young Folks also got sampled too.
Yeah, with Licky Lee, he did one too.
Yeah.
But that's fine.
But that's fine because you're still.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we're kind of like mashing, like, you know.
It's a metaphor for what you're doing.
But yeah, you know, I mean. My mom's kind of like, wow, why is the music so loud? Well, mom, like, look around. We're in Bed-Stuy. Like, this is, like, someone consider, like, you know, kind of the unofficial home of hip-hop. Like, so why would we play anything else, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you're not going to open up a country bar in Bed-Stuy.
No. We said that if my mom comes in, then just for her, we'd play some jazz. But the second she leaves.
You just got to find those rap songs that sample jazz.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
So what's coming up? You guys, I heard you guys are taking brunch and flipping it.
Yeah, actually, you know, it's crazy. We got lucky enough to meet this cat, Nick Subic, who actually used to work here at Roberta's. And he kind of just, like, it's so great. We're just so lucky to have people where we can say, look, this is our idea of how food should be. Like, can you run with it? And it's like getting a great, like a great writer on your team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're, like, writing the Do or Dine show. And he's, like, just gets it, you know?
He really assimilates our vision extremely well, like perfectly expressed by one of the items, which is the cold pizza terrine. It's essentially exactly what we're after, you know. It replicates that experience. But
that's so awesome. It's rare. I mean, it's you know, once you really get out there, you realize that type of alliance and that same thought process is rare, especially when you guys are doing something that's a little untraditional.
It's definitely been. That's probably been the most challenging part about doing this restaurant is kind of staffing. You know, and I think that's with any restaurant.
Yeah.
But
I also think that we've always talked about, like, Brooklyn workforce as far as, like, restaurants and, like, the type of restaurants that, like, here, Roberta's, you know, Rye, Trafe, all the things versus, like, what comes with New York style and, like, trying to get people to be like, I know you're in Bed-Stuy, but, like, you really do need to, like, elevate that service to a certain level and people like actually wanting to work that hard and care that much.
That's when we started this thing, one of the first things that we agreed on was we didn't want that kind of no lower jaw muscle type of service, you know.
Like, you know, like you can get the pizza if you want.
Yeah, like that kind of thing. Like, we want like articulate, you know, knowledgeable, friendly servers.
Yeah.
But, you know, just on stuffy.
Yeah, I mean, I think they can still do things on their own terms, but still bring a level. Like, you're in a service job. You don't have to work here, but if you're going to apply for this job, these are the requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, well, we're about out of time.
What?
Yeah. It's almost
there. That was an hour?
It was an hour. Yeah. Jack is nodding.
He said, so much fun.
do you guys want to give us the social mind meld stuff?
Oh, you mean like how to find us?
Yeah.
Facebook.com/doordine. You can find us on Twitter at @do_or_dine.
Was Do or Dine taken?
Yeah, actually. Yeah. I think it was actually by a company called Door Dine.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, but I didn't want that to be the case anyway.
Bummer.
And then you can find Luke, his coolest hand, and I am Eat Fellow Humans.
Awesome. And
can I give one more shout out?
Yeah.
Brunch is Sundays only. 2 p.m. to 10 p.m.
Oh, yeah, just give us
late
the hours.
Brunch.
Yeah, late brunch. 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. Brunch all day, no crying babies.
Oh, fair.
Yeah.
Very fair.
We did our brunch late for fellow travelers.
And any shout outs to significant others?
My girlfriend Brooke's pretty rad.
My wife's hot.
Okay. There it is.
Wow.
There it is. So next week we
have Valentine's Day already happened because I just got pretty romantic up in here.
Next week we have Amr from Stereo Gum, who's going to be giving us a South by Southwest preview. And who's the cook?
I think it's not. I think it's David Gelb, the producer.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's his name, David Gelb. Jiro Dreams of Sushi, which is a fantastic documentary. Mm-hmm. Which, if you haven't seen, it's...
been wanting to see that.
It's probably one of the best. It'll go up there when people are like, oh, Ratatouille, Tempoko, and all that stuff. Jiro Dreams of Sushi will be one of the best
sweet
food movies.
Thanks for listening to Snacky Tunes. We'll see you next week.
Peace.
Peace out.
This show is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.